Where's your worst suffering today?
Oh my God. There's not much suffering in this area.
All the suffering that we've done that we really want to avoid in the future is where? It's imagined. So if Adya Shanti and Byron Katie want to take your money to enroll you in your imagination of a better tomorrow, sign the check. Why do you think the crowds are so big? If you hang out with someone, a friend, and suggest that nothing's happening but the impulse of beatitude filtering through your imagination, they're all going to leave the retreat because now there's nothing in it for them. They can't rely on the sentimentality of their life prior to that moment to work urgently with the master to resolve the prior suffering and then hope that future suffering will also be ameliorated. And that's what this moment always is profuse flatlining. The profusion is irresistible, and yet it's curiously absolutely flatline. It does not convey agency. It does not convey, you know, will, choice, decision, consequence, outcome, genesis, nothing. It's just a plasma of unadulterated and disembodied affection. And you, not that there's a you, suggest whatever meaning shows up spontaneously and impersonally in your so-called mind. And that's imposed on the plasma, and then you say, what this is. The moment you say, I want to stop suffering in my future, you're locked in. You're going to suffer more. It's coming. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying you've failed by doing that.
You haven't failed at all because you're
sending
checks out.
Yeah. If you commit yourself to suffering by avoiding future suffering, you haven't failed.
How about committing yourself to suffering more and failing at that?
Yes.
That's a little bit of a trick in the head. Really determined. I'm going to see if I can amplify my suffering.
Byron Katie does a great job of amplifying that by using the mechanism of I have no resistance or fear that whatever it was that was really, really, really bothering me should happen again.
That's what the work does, showing you that.
Yeah.
But it starts from a belief in past suffering by definition.
Everything starts from belief. Because this moment has no belief. And without belief, you can say this really sucks, or it rocks, or it's a portal to unmitigated transcendence. You decide.
Or do we decide? We were talking about agency. Do we decide?
No, of course not. One thing and one thing only is not a thing and is doing all this, including the delusional, wonderful delusion that you're here as a separative being.
Do you all want to order mail?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I just wanted to be sure I didn't take away too long. So.
We appreciate that, Dave.
Oh, thanks.
At least your mind at the young 48 isn't getting foggy yet.
Oh, no. That'll be next year.
Okay. We'll make sure we're not here for that then.
Uh-oh.
I
appreciate that. Yeah, of course. That's a nice thing.
Can I have an extended
Thank you.
I think I have the smoked salmon platter.
Okay.
I have no onion, and instead have like a cucumber.
Okay.
And I'd like a pile of arugula with that.
All right.
I'm going to have the pancakes with no butter and lots of syrup. And can I have a side of order of a couple scrambled eggs or something for some protein?
Yeah. Thank you. Sure. Hello, sir.
Hi, good morning. I'll have the Eggs Benedict, too.
Okay.
As well.
As well.
As well.
Also.
In addition, too.
As a matter of fact, I'll just have her eggs.
That's right.
Yeah.
he'll have both orders.
And on those two scrambled eggs, he wants no salt.
Okay, I'll tell him.
Yeah.
Country omelet with lump crab, mushrooms, and cheese. By lump crab, you mean the real crab, not the...
Oh, yeah, not the artificial.
No.
Okay, sure. Hello.
Now I'm torn between the Eggs Benedict and the omelet. I think I'm going to go with the Eggs Benedict. I'll have his Eggs Benedict.
Yeah.
All right, everyone.
Well, somebody's going to eat fast and just keep passing the plate around.
Just passing it around, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to put names on it.
Well, yours is pretty specific with the extra arugula and the no onions and the cucumber, so that'll be pretty simple.
Yeah. Well, yours is special order.
Yeah, well, but your two might get confused because they're kind of the same. They give you his and give it his to you.
I'm going to have to check the name tag.
That's right.
Once you get excited about not wanting to suffer, it's too late. You've nailed the coffin of suffering.
How can you avoid it?
That's the interesting question.
We all come on, even as babies. Suffering, feed me. You know, that's like...
Well,
but is that suffering?
Yeah, you might not accuse the baby of suffering.
Yeah. Just make them feel like, they look pretty miserable.
Mama's attention.
But even in the inventory of your own suffering, would you accuse yourself of suffering?
It's almost, there's been times where it's like a bubble, like one of those, you know, when you blow the bubbles and they get these big wobbly kind of like just one little prick and it just is gone. Like it's as real as that bubble being solid mass before it's popped.
It stands bubble theory, I believe.
Bubble
boy. There's a certain sorrow that accompanies the retreatant. Sticks to the retreatant who's gone to see the master solution provider for a fee and then packages that solution, puts that solution in their medicine bag where the entire burden of their life also resides, and then walks merrily into their life after, you know, the retreat, after the turnaround house. There's nothing to do about this at all. But once you pay the money and go to the retreat, get the solution, practice the solution, become certified in the solution, make your own measly living trying to sell the solution to other, you know, dumb fuck poser suffering losers. At some point, maybe the whole thing is going to collapse on you and you're like, fuck me, there's nothing to do about this.
Yeah.
Oh, now you're soaring. Now you've caught wind. And that's always the gift, isn't it? Here's your present experience. Catch wind. Otherwise, you condemn yourself to being small, corporeal, belligerent. And your wings collapse. How simple is that? Crazy simple. How impossible is it? Absolutely impossible. Deal with the paradox of how simple and impossible your present experience is. Do that. Do that one thing. And that's and doing that, whatever that suggests to you, because no one can say what it is, right? That's it. You could say a different craft. It's a different shamanic craft. Just hanging out with the, you know, blissful pathos of your experience. Without the slightest hint of amelioration. Here it is. The blissful pathos of your experience. There's no belief. It can suffer. It can catch air. What's it to you? The moment we presume our experience to be sufficiently solid to tell everyone about our suffering or commit ourselves to the ending of that suffering, you know, your wings are clipped. If you say that to an audience of 300 early on, retreat's over. I mean, stay and sit. We'll have a few conversations, you know. Food's okay. You know, text your friends. Draw a few doodles. Right? Get angry. Get pissed off. Accost somebody in the woods and have the retreat manager find out about it. But you see, the urgency to remedy what you think this is, you're doomed. You're doomed. You've committed yourself to imagination as being, as telling you the truth about anything. Then you're really fucked. You've committed yourself that imagination is telling you the truth about things.
And has your best interest at heart.
Oh, yeah. And might have your best interest at heart. Yeah, not quite, eh? Fascination does not suffer. Profusion does not suffer. Belief assigned to me as this body, this memory, this mind, these incredible sensations and feelings, including, of course, all the emotive, right? The incredible pageant of emotive experience. Whether the gleeful or the disdainful, right? Whether I've suffered from abandonment or enmeshment or violation or being ignored. And isn't it the profundity of sentiment, of emotional, right, prowess and power associated with the body that suggests I and lays the groundwork for the history of my suffering? Right? I mean, when we say vulnerability, that vulnerability is the beauty of your, you could say, emotional life, or the vulnerability of an injurable body. And yet, the profundity of your emotional life and your body appear in that which cannot, will not, does not suffer. But it's real easy for attention to be associated with the formidability of emotivity and corporeality to say, I am suffering. But both of those, or everything, the entire profundity that punctuates your entire experience is truly unafflictable.
And that's the one that's look over there is pointing to that.
Yeah,
pointing to that rather than.
Yeah. Look over there. Look over there is so absurdly simple, and that's why it's so, you know, we take umbrage with it, right? Because we think that my present experience is the consequence of everything that occurred prior to this moment, or my present experience is the consequence of everything that's appearing so-called in this moment. But your present experience absolutely has no duration. It's not really the consequence of anything. There's no genesis that results in your present experience. And if there's no genesis that you can hold accountable for that present experiencing is so, then looking over there changes your entire life. Because that's what's real now. I mean, even if you're arterially bleeding from a landmine. Which can really suck.
Look over there.
Look over there. Look over there. Go away. Yeah, right. Nice clouds. And then your brain drops dead because the blood and the oxygen stop. And then, you know, you become the clouds. I don't know.
What's to keep that turning into denial?
Nothing. Nothing. It can be stolen by what we refer to as egotism in an instant to become denial. Absolutely.
That's right.
Bam.
That's right. Is that action avoidance or is it just simply
nothing?
The possibility of presence, not being imprisoned by the need to fix something.
Yes. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
The retreat and English.
I love those characters. They're just, especially this guy. I mean, it's just so simple.
Yeah. Like. Really, the minions are enlightened.
Yes, minions are definitely enlightened. And just think, someone created them. Boy, that person really must be enlightened.
So that urge to fix something is oftentimes amplifies the very thing that we're trying to do something. If you're trying to do something with someone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a great. Isn't it a great exploration to check in with what's present and play around with what's real or what could possibly be denial?
Play around with what?
Whether this is so or whether you're in denial.
Of what it really is.
What does denial even mean in that?
Well, I was just imagining a very simple scenario, like someone has just taken something. Now, did you see my second?
Well, what's that?
And then they run away. No, I mean in a practical, you know, scenario, you're interacting with someone and they don't want to face it, something that's unpleasant. And the dialogue requires, you know, some reciprocation. I know that's presuming two identifications of a self, dealing with details around those selves and stuff going amongst and between them.
Yeah.
So I know I'm in that realm.
Yes? Yeah.
And imagining there's a problem.
Yeah. Katie. Maybe turn the volume down a little bit down here. And then ask the group upstairs to quiet down, too.
Yeah, they're getting a little rowdy for us. We have to swear louder so we can hear ourselves.
We're on the verge of something here.
We would have been, we just couldn't hear it.
They almost haven't figured out.
Blessed are the cheesemakers. What did he say?
No, it's a parable. He means all dairy farmers.
All dairy farmers.
Not just cheese.
Oh. let's say you're seeking for comfort, intimacy, consensus, camaraderie with another human being, and you can't get it. Who's in denial? Them or you?
Only they would change.
That's where you go. That's right. There's a setup of an expectation and then an assessment that this behavior is avoidance behavior as opposed to I have range. Or there is range. You know, take the I have there.
Yes. The sickness of codependency, behaviorally speaking, is we continue to place the reins of authenticity in the hands of another.
You're assuming agency. You're assuming we are doing that. That's like, yeah, I could even choose to not put it in the hands of another.
Not until you've been to enough meetings. And I'm not talking about this meeting. Coda meeting.
If this meeting had a name followed by the word anonymous, what would it be called?
Benedict. Benedict Anonymous.
PFA.
This is really curious that you don't notice where you turn to satisfy the hunger, existential hunger, for authenticity, for reality.
People notice in a big aspect, you just mentioned the anonymous, people notice when they take alcohol off the charts. People notice when they can't stop eating. You know, like, we notice because it shows up when you've got that existential you want out and you reach for something that seemingly helps. So it comes back and bites you.
Let's say you've matured sufficiently as a human to pull back from others, meaning that you've become sufficiently reliant on your own experience to convey something about reality.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not looking elsewhere for love. I'm not looking elsewhere for approval. I'm not looking elsewhere for strokes, security, comfort, political agreement. It doesn't mean I'm isolating myself and then build pipe bombs. You know, that's kind of an extreme form of, right?
Explosive situation.
Little explosive situation, yeah. Now, that's big. I mean, in this, what we call this culture, right? Withdrawing from placing your legitimacy in the hands of others, the media, the talking head, you know, ISIS, whatever it is, that's big. And that's a lifetime's work. Forget about spirituality.
You influence on spirituality, and that's putting your legitimacy in the next retreat or the next talk.
Yes,
the next,
of course.
The next practice, the next meditation.
We do it with that. Right. We do it with that as well, right? We also rely on the pageantry of spirituality, the playhouse of spirituality, right? To legitimize self in hopes of ameliorating suffering. Yeah. We may bow at the guru's feet.
Could I have a bagel instead? I just didn't realize it didn't come with.
Yeah, we don't do bagels anymore here.
You don't have any bagels?
No. Let me check and see if the inn has any.
All right.
Their continental breakfast.
All right.
I'll look it for
That'd
you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Jules. Yeah, there's a little bleany thing on the bottom.
Maybe
but I'll still look.
I'll just do that. That's fine.
Do you want me to check?
Yeah.
I don't
no,
mind.
Actually, that's fine.
Is that good? Okay.
Yeah, that should be fine.
No jelly.
They could have given you an English muffin.
Say freedom could be spoken of as impersonal self-reliance.
That kind of begs what when you say impersonal self-reliance, you mean self as in this set of awareness and experiences and
yes, as the warp and woof of experiencing.
The purity of that, not the mind-created, oh my God,
yes.
What am I going to do with this life?
That's right, because, you see, the problem is that we trust mind, meaning we trust memory and imagination as telling us what about reality. So that's why I said you first withdraw from others. Authorities outside yourself from conveying to you what reality is. Mm-hmm. But then you have to withdraw from yourself.
That's
where the problem
is. Isn't it? Well, but see, that's always a problem, but that problem one never gets to if we remain engrossed in codependence for most of our lives. We never get to the problem of our own inner authority as long as we are habitually placing that authority in the hands of others. Which we do, you could say, unconsciously, to avoid ourselves.
Well, not just by others,
who we really don't trust
about. Just clarify, not just other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Why not? All in. Before you can get to a certain depth of, let's just call it inquiry into awakening, before you can get to a certain depth of it, you have to have some health. You have to have a sufficient amount of health that you're able to withdraw from the influence and authority of everything outside yourself. I'm not saying you've cured your codependency once and for all forever, but you've had to make sufficient amount of progress that you're actually interested in feeling yourself to, let's say, go to a next level of insight or revelation or intimacy. Well, we're speaking metaphorically about the process of awake that's occurring in your experience. Yeah. Without necessarily, you know, having to anthropomorphize it. It's poetic. Right. Yeah.
And he comes out and he says, this is the end of the road, spiritually.
Uh-huh. He says that about himself?
I don't know if he was talking about himself or... I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of teachers in these recent decade or so, or more, have claimed end of the roadness. They lied.
Because I was there then for an eternity. I've imagined that still.
You know where the end of the road is? You're the end of the road. You are. This moment, this is the end of the road. It has nothing to do with Peter Fenner or his teachings or Adam Shaxfield or Falling Open or anything. This is the end of the road, and tag, you're it. Yeah. Because we're not, you know, we may indulge in philosophical gibberish because, you know, we may as well talk about shit while we're having a nice breakfast. But the fact of what we're contemplating is that your present experience right now, right here, is the end of the road. And that's what we wiggle, you could say, wiggle out of. We wiggle away from that by returning again and again to, you know, belief as a correspondence course.
Meaning we're living from a mind-created, thought-created version.
Mm-hmm.
Reality.
You're living vicariously through fantasy.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, that's the whole thing in a, you know, kind of little nutshell. You're living vicariously through the filter of fantasy. How's it going?
Well, it always turns sour. It's like you're talking about doing the right thing. I've done so many right things that have just turned into the wrong thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can do plenty of right things, and in the end, you don't know.
How many times does the right thing turn into the wrong thing? Almost all of them.
I've watched all things being able to navigate and, like, sort of avoid suffering based on doing the quote right thing. Because there's been too many best decisions I could make that didn't have to bite me.
Give more, half and half?
I'll put more on the
fail miserable.
All right, thanks. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And I think we might need more sugar.
I think you're
the brown one.
Well, let's see. Let's say I'm an ACOA. You know, raised in the typical American dysfunctional family by parents that were one or both alcoholics. Their behavior was erratic, push pull, come and go, could have been violating somehow. And all I wanted, since I could remember, was, you know, something called love. Couldn't get it, couldn't find it. I internalized that whole fucking mess as something having to do with me. So then my adult life is punctuated by hoping that I could behave in the right way to make the universe I always wanted it to be.
Yeah.
You're toast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's how seriously debilitating, right, addicted parents raising children turns out. But that's epidemic.
It's interesting sitting and looking at sort of the normal patterns of suffering in a, like, an Al-Anon room.
Yeah.
Versus normal patterns of suffering in AA rooms.
Yep.
They have a different character.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In Al-Anon, it's all heavy and responsible and,
mm-hmm,
kind of all up to me, as you've just described.
Mm-hmm.
In AA, it's kind of like a little more devil may care.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Isn't it fascinating that you can receive the presentation of the addiction, the recovery, the story, the lamentation, the blame, the shame, the codependency, the narcissism, the enmeshment. And you can almost predict with a certain kind of accuracy what someone's principal deal is. Very crafty. I mean, how many times have you been at a meeting where no crosstalk is pretty clearly established, and yet all of these clever motherfuckers figure out how to indulge in crosstalk without it, without it being overt?
Oh yeah. Well, the first indication that that's going to happen is, now this isn't crosstalk and it's not an attack on anybody here, but.
Well, that's a bold one.
On.
That's a bold one. That's like, you know, that's like a 90 mile an hour fastball hitting you in the face.
Yeah.
The other ones are the more tricky ones, where they don't even preface the attack. They don't preface the attack with this is not crosstalk. Right. It's like it's the kind of personality that is absolutely consumed with making others wrong.
Yeah, where does that come from?
You could say it could come from a young boy that was raised, you know, in a family of a bunch of sisters whose father worked pretty much all the time at a bar.
Are you talking about me?
I mean, name any of us, right?
Well, no, I had a bunch of sisters, and my father owned a tavern. And...
Does Jeff know that?
Well, yeah, he's got an NSA connection, you know. So.
He has this all well-researched profile. He checks his notes before coming here every time.
I mean, even our wall.
Even our wall.
Our walk.
Oh, the walk. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
What do you mean?
Just
postural reflection.
Yeah. Toe walkers.
The toe walkers.
Toe walkers.
Whether you lead with your head or your chest.
Yeah. Oh, body language, you can tell your whole history from it. That makes sense, actually.
That's an interesting impulse, that they're blaming something for something. You know,
mm-hmm.
And really making a case and all this energy, you know, pushing back. And I see where I justify it because I have information.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I make an assessment. And then I project this. That has to stop. You know, this has to stop. And so I've answered that question in a sense that I have it, but I don't see it, you know, in the interpersonal level that I was asking the question, but I certainly have it. It's alive and well.
Yep.
This justice track of, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to report it. I'm going to put it down. I'm going to have to sign petitions. I'm going to make sure.
Yeah.
You know, you're on the Bunsen burner is under your butt. And I, so, oh. Okay.
Yeah. And you could say all of the motivation for that is kind of a response to injury. What I'm going to do about you is a response to injury.
Response to injury.
Say hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
So, here you are living as undifferentiated plasma of unmitigated bliss, trying to get even with everyone and everything. And then you wonder, why am I suffering so much?
Just give me another shot.
And they're probably more miserable than you are to start with.
Yeah.
The only real emotion that I found when I found out that my father died was a little flickering of, you know, games up to get what I want from him.
Wow.
That's all I can find.
Yeah.
We found ecstatic joy.
Mm. One less person I can manipulate in the world.
Yeah.
Damn it. Dag nabbit.
Game's really up.
Yeah, it's really up, yeah.
And I'm not a bad person. It's not that I didn't love my father, but...
No, you're pretty shitty.
Don't I know it.
Why don't you leave the room? We'll take a vote. Nah, stay.
No,
we'll take
please.
The vote. We'll take the
please
vote right
stay.
Here. Yeah. Get over yourself. Nobody likes you. It's not going to go your way. Yeah. Call 211. You'll get Mick Jagger on the other end of the phone seeking seeking emotional rescue.
Yeah.
Well, but the problem with all the people that do like you is that they don't like themselves, so I trust them. You see what it takes? Oh yeah. Oh, every day. I write it in lipstick on the bathroom mirror. Poser. I write it backwards. Well, that's another.
I look in the mirror.
That's a Bruce Jenner thing.
Oh boy.
Not can. Does. Non-stop.
Our what point? You said our blank point? What point?
It's our imagination.
I mean, even though our imagination.
Still not like little puppy dogs who are, you know, I don't know, they still live a myth.
You have to ask them. Ask them when they're in that demonstrative condition. Excuse me, Ramana. Excuse me. Snap, Ramana, I'm talking to you.
Well, maybe.
Where are you living?
Yeah.
But it's fair, let's say it's fair to say that what we're referring to as imagination won't quit, and you're not about to become transcendent of it anytime soon. That's, imagination is not a problem.
That's real coffee.
Oh, is it?
I'm good for now.
I think I got real coffee, but I
How come what?
Can I get you?
Yeah.
Just foundation and confusion. And there's imagination. The matter itself. Like, I know I have a question to ask.
Have a little more coffee. Pour it over your head. I think it gets in faster.
Cold water for you. I
don't know. Really? Not necessarily.
Like,
I'll have like that.
Then you're sort of like. You wouldn't even go back to the myth. You know what I mean? Like,
you wouldn't go back to.
Like, if you're like. It's free floating from fascination.
Okay, let's say you are.
There's still this myth. But why would you go back to them? I mean, like, you would still be calling people by their name.
Yeah.
But that would be a myth. You know? Like, you'd be saying a long time. Like, why would you say to people, call people by name?
Well, if they stole your Frisbee and you want it back, you know, I mean, if Bob stole your Frisbee, you're not going to say, hey, Betty, give me my Frisbee back. Okay.
Unless you're like this biological being.
Yeah, you're suggesting that the experience you're having now could be somehow associated with a choice that you make.
You don't want to
awaken to an idea. You wouldn't have got very far.
It's too hard not necessarily having a frame of reference.
There you are. I mean, even in your own, curious discovery process, borrowing from whatever language and feeling you can to, right, speak about this undulating whatever this is that can't ever be caged or touched or that it will behave in a certain way. What better evidence can we have of it? I'm like thinking about it, feeling it, trying to imagine my experience, what a yogi's experience might be, where it should go, why it might go there. Would total dissolution look like this or like that? Why would I come out of samadhi and say, where are my eggs? Yeah, right. That's right. You burn the non. Once again, you burn the non. But master, that's what took you out of samadhi. Oh, the non is delicious.
So it sounds like what's being pointed to is our tendency to overlay onto reality and have it reinforced by all these agreements, and in our own head too, that this is how it is. And sort of the tickled suggestion of, feel that away if it's covered each other in a sense, or allow it to peel away.
Well,
that presumption or that reification or that
the peel away overlay. The peel away is sneaky. It's a slippery slope, because the peel away could then become the agenda of an aspirant,
yeah,
right, getting a remedy. Peel away what exactly?
Or just recognize.
I think that's more what we're playing with. Is that here's this. Is it recognized by you? Unrecognized by you? Have you already made up your mind about your present experience? If you've already made up your mind about your present experience, well, that, if we borrow from Paul Hederman's literature, that's selfing. That's the apparitional appearance of self, because now a million boundary fields have been created, more than a million, as a flashpoint from one tiny, 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 inconsequential dot, which is you've made up your mind about this. And having made up your mind about it, then experiencing appears to you from the vantage point of self. See how quickly, effortlessly, effervescently, beautifully, sufferingly we make up our minds about this, and then occupy what appears to be a continuity, behaviorally, experientially, subject, object, cosmos, and then spin, right? So it will continue to spin, most likely. I mean, you can ask ask some enlightened people if they come through and say, has this stopped spinning for you? Or whatever might come to mind. What's changed for you? See what they might have to say about it. And if what they say about it is unsuitable, ask them again. Smack him in the head. Yeah. And it's curious how, depending on who you ask, you're going to get a reply or a response which is customized, you could say, or peculiar to them. Peculiar to their personality. Peculiar to their background.
Yeah,
No, you cannot. You can't trust anything anyone has to say, most importantly, yourself.
You can't trust it coming in a accurate way anyway. We filter everything.
There is no accuracy.
There's no absolute
no.
measure of
uh-huh.
is what you're saying.
Yep.
I can't help but to see that by noticing that,
mm-hmm.
that presumption or that adamacy or that kind of contracted, I know this and that's just the way it is,
yeah.
sort of loosens up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's the idea.
Not necessarily an active principle, but it maybe can't dupe you, perhaps. It will pull you into the drama of, I know, and this is right, and this is wrong.
Yeah.
I know, and if I do this, I'll be free of suffering.
Right.
I know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you want to, yes, the loosening up is good, because as a person, you're screwed, and you want to unscrew.
Loosen the screw.
You want to loosen the screw on the genesis of belief occurring as in right now.
Peter did a great riff on it that I heard recently about how you'll never get a mini fix.
No.
You will never understand it. It'll just, you know, you will never get below it. There's no other layers you're going to get to. You know, you just have to become.
Just take it at face value, you've done it.
That right? Yeah. I mean, we keep thinking that there's something beneath it.
Yeah, if we just try harder.
We get to that level.
That next retreat will get us to some other perception that is what we're
never going
to
make any sense. It'll never go deeper.
It's a perfectly palatable metaphor when the inertia of your belief system might cease or slow down through the recognition of present fantasy. And that's just kind of a temporal milestone. Because if that, as that recognition, can we say deepens, then it's no longer the recognition of fantasy as a so-called, you know, insight. It's just this. So it's not activized, right? You're not actively engaged in remembering that this is fantasy. You could say we actively engage in remembering that this is fantasy for as long as it's clear that this is not fantasy. As long as it appears to be presenting as fantasy. But what if this is not fantasy? What position do you need to take? Fantasy? Not fantasy. Uppercase self? Lowercase self. You see, what if there's no discrimination at all?
Sorry, I like the word unencumbered.
Yep.
Because maybe it's not that you're doing it fantasy or less fantasy, or seeing things more insightfully, but you're less encumbered by the compulsion to say, I got this figured out, at least on this level.
Well,
and it comes with suffering and frustration and pushes and pulls and all kinds of other stuff. And even formulas where, hey, I'm improving, I'm less involved in that push-pull. Unencumbered is still pointing to encumbrance of sorts.
It is.
Encumbrance of investment in overlay and this okay, this is what it means.
It still suggests measure and comparison, right? The canvas on which we're playing a certain kind of chess game. which is great because that's what the spinning does, right? The pattern recognition, pattern assertion, anthropomorphization, fantasy spinning, projection, hypotheticals, anecdotal references, injury, revenge. Non-stop, right? Non-stop. Hey, dude. So if we try to focus on putting the brakes on this which is non-stop, you're kind of wasting your time. So, where are you going to put this newfound freedom? What container? Oh, I got the perfect box for this.
Some of the attractiveness for me of meditation, it feels like you just slow it down. Like sometimes there's that desire to have it just slow down, like not the demands, not the movement, just slow down so I can actually get a good look at this. And it, for the most part, doesn't slow down, but there's occasional little periods where it's almost like it keeps moving, but something else slows down and the movement doesn't matter.
It's the rain under the bridge.
You're not in the rain anymore. The rain's falling all around, but it's not hitting you.
No, that's not what happened when you went under that bridge. There was no explanation under that bridge. There was no spiritual metaphor that could touch that. And whatever that is or was or wasn't or isn't, it does not give a fuck about suffering or the amelioration of suffering. The Buddha and all his friends can just piss off. Look at the self-inflated culture that's been created from the anthropomorphization and celebration of suffering and the end of suffering. As if, oh, we got this. Fuck you guys. Bullshit. A lot of pride, isn't there? A lot of pride in suffering and the end of suffering. Even when they accuse you of being prideful. Assholes. And then to hold you responsible or accountable through attraction and aversion as to the reason that suffering is occurring. Horrible, horrible, horrible iatrogenic accusation that means nothing. Then all the Buddhists go around accusing each other of, you know, the degree to which you're suffering from attraction and aversion and therefore bringing suffering upon yourself. You're all bringing suffering upon yourselves because of how you think and what you think. It's not true. It never was true. The whole goddamn religion from 2,500 years ago was false from the get-go. Oh, well. Let's go get some prayer flags and keep it up. Thank you. that's what's wrong with all the enlightened people, you see. I mean, they want to help. I trust that their, you know, motive and frequency is true. But it, you could say it hurts as much as it helps. Because this fetishizes so quickly. That you lose yourself so quickly. Whether you're indulging in criminal activity, addictive activity, or spiritually devotional activity. Or you're a famous chant artist. Hare Krishna with a bullet. Right.
All you can picture is what?
Anyone want more coffee?
You want to start off? You want to start off right there. Adam, exactly. Profusion and fascination hook themselves into an entity. I don't know what happens in the mind of a giraffe, you know, or a dolphin or anything. And anything I or any of us might say about what happens in humans is total conjecture. Because we don't know what's going on.
We don't know any humans.
We don't know what's going on inside ourselves. That's exactly right. You don't even know what's happening in your own experience, let alone pontificating why the, you know, the Armenians or the Jews or the Gypsies all have to die. Everyone from that group has to die. They're a blight. Having the capacity to use meaningless metaphors to hone in on the undulating vapors of present experience could be useful in like a power washer to wash away the detritus of fantasy. It's not a guaranteed path to so-called liberation. It's just when it is better than going bowling. When it's better, then it's better. Right? When, call it contemplation, inquiry, yogas of all kinds are better than going bowling, that's when they've become better than going bowling. So then you give your attention and your urgency and your affection. You take time out of a beautiful Sunday to have breakfast in a cave. Taste it, you're just a blues traveler.
Yeah.
should find another place with that said.
For the nicer days.
We can. What time does the Plumsteadville Inn open?
It's a great idea.
They might be busy.
Is that a buffet thing?
We don't know.
No, it's Ferry Road and 611.
They might be a buffet, though.
The Plumstead is a supper.
Sorry.
But we pretty much pay $20 here.
With tip and everything.
Oh, no. We hurt ourselves.
I know. They're dangerous. You want to limit the intake.
Well, it'd be nice to plan one outside brunch.
We can meet. If it's nice, we can meet in a park or something.
Box of Joe?
Yeah.
Joe and Dog Nest.
Can we hire someone to bring us a hot egg?
Sure.
Oh, that's right.
Some of them have
to go.
Some of them have grills there. We can just whip them up.
Okay, I'm still really liking the Plumsteadville Inn.
Yeah. Well, my calendar, not my yet.
We make a reservation for a Sunday there. I'll
Google it.
Just don't do it when we're in Florida, please. Just, I don't want to miss it.
I can't remember if it was there or the one in Texas that has a really good buffet for $20.
I'll Google them.
Chambers for $13.99. That's inside. Oh, that's right. Afterward.
Beautiful Sunday.
We were talking about Awakening, but now it's breakfast breakfast venues.
Yeah, really. Breakfast at Tiffany's.
And there's no real difference.
No.
I like that.
There's no real difference. You can see what you're up against.
Mine just runs amok.
I'll vote for Jules.
Of course, there's the eyes.
Black. Ooh, the black bass. Do they?
I know it's a good buffet. It's also accompanied by champagne.
Oh, they do a brunch buffet.
As much champagne as you would drink.
Oh,
that could be dangerous. Well, all you need is all this with alcohol.
Oh my God.
But it's like they're.
Let's say you were interested in honing in on something that sounded like the lowest common denominator for the genesis of suffering or the cessation of suffering. You wouldn't mess around with attraction and aversion. You're way too late. That's why you can't accuse attraction and aversion of being responsible for your so-called suffering. It's too late, way too late. Because attraction and aversion are so far after the fact of belief suggesting that something is happening. That by messing around with symptoms, right?
Well, you have to have a fully formed self to make decisions about attraction and aversion.
That's why it's fun to dial it back. Where might you go if it were a place in your experience to get out from under the genesis of belief?
Stomach.
Actually, we can go to Panera.
Sorry, that's where we go.
Let's go to Panera's to get rid of the genesis of bullying.
That is the lowest common denominator. No
that
question
you
about
control.
It. I'm glad.
Please, please, give me a break.
I did say your stomach.
So, yeah. The breakdown of attraction or aversion. This cup comes from the waitress, okay? It's a cup that's got different colors. I hate it. The cup comes, it gets set down, I see it, and I take in the color, and I go, yuck, I don't like that color.
Sure.
So it seems like there's arrival of experience, perception of what's here, and then sort of evaluation of what to do. It seems like kind of three steps. It arrives, there's perception of it, and then there's attraction, aversion, evaluation. Like,
okay.
I don't like that.
So those elements are observable. No one would disagree. And in what are they appearing? Aren't they already symptomatic?
Of our crazy state of mind, I don't like to look like
that. You're pointing to the bigger circle that encompasses them all.
Why waste my time otherwise?
Comes from the void.
What do you think I am, Adyashanti? Do you think I want to fuck with you?
Okay, you might come here all the time.
Right.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like, why is there, you can go to some sort of, like, negative aspect of state?
Why go to a state, negative or positive?
Yeah, here's a, that comes, go to where it's beyond the state.
Okay.
Appearance of cup on being played, perception of cup on being played, attraction or aversion on being played.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. Fun. Good.
Don't settle for that.
Yes.
Appearance of cup on being played.
Yes.
It's playing.
Well, you know, Peter is very good at articulating. You might call this, you might use the barking sound cup when this pattern appears in your consciousness. But
toadstool.
More appropriate. I like to sip coffee from toadstools. But this, right, whether this is still or revolving in your so-called visual field, without just blaspheming and calling it cup, you don't know what this is. Light, sound, motion, pattern, sensation, color, like, dislike. Holy shit.
Like a puppet show.
There's a world of presumption in cup appears in here.
A big world.
A world of presumption.
A big world. A whole heap of suffering right there. Yeah. Cup of Joe, heap of suffering. Yeah. So here's experience, whatever that is. Thank you. Is there a genesis? Did this begin? So the five senses, what are the five senses? The five senses? Give me a break. We use the word hearing, but what are we talking about? Oh my God! We use the word seeing. What are we talking about? Oh my God! No matter what you call a thing, basically it's a shorthand for this is off the charts.
Some days it does not feel at all like
I hear you.
Some days it feels like
that's when I get up and write in lipstick on the mirror closer. Nobody told me there'd be days like this. Nobody told me there'd be days like this. Great days indeed.
Even our ability to take this and ruin it is amazing.
And ruin it. Yeah, yeah.
You're assuming reference that it could be ruined. That ruin is bad, non-ruin is good. But, oh, what the fuck is this is good and ruin is bad. There has to be a framework to even give that.
If there's only one thing.
Yeah?
Absolutely. If there's only one thing, not that there is, or that it can be counted. Yeah. even seeking for optimal enjoyment. I'm good.
Thank you. Okay. Does anybody want to refill? Are you good down on the side?
Yeah.
Even seeking optimal enjoyment from what we call your present experience is just a heap of suffering.
It's like the tar bag. Start with that.
And again, I'm making a distinction. One experience is direct, and the other is through evaluative assessments, like I can improve this. At least that's what I'm.
Yes.
This is what my mind just did.
Yes, but we understand full well this through the evaluative, right? Let's go to what you refer to as its so-called contrary, as direct. This is fun. Find direct. As a unicity that only knows absolute inclusivity, you can't find. Because find requires some kind of perturbation in the field to be the finder of. But as an unbreakable and unbroken unicity of absolute plasma, right? Mutagenic plasma. You can't find it. That's not to deny the irrefutability that, something's going on.
So would a better descriptor be experiencing? Because it's not pointing to a subject or necessarily an object.
Yeah, we can have fun refining through the word forms reference to the unspeakable.
Yeah, I mean, I do enjoy the language. The language that is tickling that which cannot be really grasped or accurately assessed with thought and word.
Yeah, thought and word are all symptomatic of the inclusive unicity. So how could they step outside of it and have some meaningful comment upon it?
It's kind of curious.
Yeah.
Like the poles of a battery. How is it that you have current and you have these strong identifications of positive
endpoints? Yeah.
And then some kind of like loop of activity, sparks or whatever.
Nice, yeah.
That's an open kind of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. One's present experience is already awake. It's already liberated and liberating as the liberator. But once we assign, right, particular, as in self and experience and suffering and like and dislike and what we think is happening, then it only appears that the already liberated unicity particularizes and then wants to go off in search of its resolution. And that has nothing to do with attraction and aversion. Nothing at all. If there was a mechanism for what we refer to as suffering, it would have nothing at all to do with attraction and aversion. Nothing at all. Those are way late.
Isn't the aversion factor in suffering, though?
doesn't like the focus on it and the obsession with it, make a big appears to
that it does. Fixation along with it.
Yeah. If you don't fixate on it, and you just look over there, it appears to be a different experience. Take hot flashes, for example. When you meditate on them intensively, they seem a lot bigger than if you just look over there, and then before you know it, the sweat's here, and then before you know it, it's drying, and before you know it, you're done. It's different. It's a different experience of resisting and studying, and oh my God, not this, I can't see it on my head.
Right. Yeah, but you're not really interested in evaluating or resolving this trivial nature of superficial suffering.
You get much more neutral about it. Just whatever. You almost can't find the motivation to even do anything about it.
If this wasn't born, we're not so agitated about the imagination that I am going to die. Though we may have a profound set of, you know, emotional and sentimental loyalties. They don't have to be accompanied by the suffering of loss.
It's your affiliation that begins to move over to what wasn't born and doesn't die, as opposed to being affiliated with the body,
yeah,
the story.
Yeah.
You switch from one boat to another real gently without trying to tip the friggin' canoe.
You see, suffering you can find, as Dave mentioned, the filter of preference and belief, that you can find apparitionally, but still it feels like it can be found. The other thing, the luminous, inexplicable, you can't find it, so it's not the opposite of suffering.
The mind can't find it.
Well, the mind, what we call the mind is just fascination in profusion. It's not real.
You can't find it because you can't grasp it as an object. We're sure that it needs to be an object we can get our hands around, and it's just, it doesn't work that way.
Well, you want to take the sense of agency, meaning the brilliance of experience, to go find the thing. But experience itself is already the symptom of the thing.
That's what I mean about the constant objectification. Like,
yes.
Constantly in search of objects.
Mm-hmm.
Objects in search of objects, or relating to objects.
Yes. Yes.
Bizarre.
That's profusion.
Yeah.
And that profusion occurs to what? To fascination. You wouldn't know that's happening unless there was this, whatever we're referring to as fascination, watching the mechanism of profusion and association and identification and what appears to be suffering and the hope that one can ameliorate that suffering.
Fascinated with all of that.
Yeah. Yep.
But there does seem to be a shift in some way when you're kind of, I guess, like becoming less fascinated or objectifying everything or something.
This is.
It doesn't mean you don't do it anymore, but you kind of like something does seem to.
Yeah. As it dials back. As presence, call it presence, who cares what we call it, it could be toadstool. As you dial it back, fascination is really, really interested in the consequence of profusion, which looks like the imagination of my life. Dial it back, fascination is really fascinated by impersonal profusion, which my life is off the table. But the profusion hasn't gone anywhere. Yeah, dial it back. Fascination becomes absolutely fascinated with fascination. It's not even, no profusion anymore. Certainly not the profusion of the myth of your life, and certainly not profusion as, you know, evidentiary fractal hypnosis. Gone. Fascination becomes fascinated with all that's left, which happens to be fascination itself. Then that goes. And here it is. You've touched down. Why not step outside and shake hands with the extraterrestrials?
They're all about you.
You've already touched down. You may as well get out of the craft and say, take me to your leader. Where do you have breakfast? On this planet. Plumsteadville sounds good.
They look like this guy from here.
Yeah, they're all minions.
I had a weird experience. Maybe I'm looking for something.
I always do.
I'm driving in the car, and all of a sudden I have this like sensation that I don't want to call it a sensation, right? It might be one of those just sort of comparative some kind of outside staring at the public. I wasn't, I'm saying. Yeah. So I was driving, and I felt like, oh, this is interesting. It was almost like my imagination was driving. We're driving from point A, my house, to point B, somewhere along 309. And
oh, a strip club.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I drove to Adult World hoping I would find some adults. I freaked out once I got inside. I stayed.
Well, they are adults.
Yeah, that's the soul. You need to eat the food on something.
So I was like driving, and like, here I am in my imagination thinking that to get from point A to point B, I need to be in this like vehicle thing. And it almost seemed like I was, you know how when you're like a kid, you go in and you're driving and you're sitting there and you're sitting there and you pretend you're driving. It's just like that. And I thought, well, this is interesting.
Mm.
And then I snapped back out of it real pretty quickly because I thought, well, maybe I'm like, they're eating too much blood. Like, I'm low blood sugar.
I'm having an out of butter experience.
I like that.
Thank God I don't have those.
Well, the mushrooms, man.
They better call the butter hotline.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a glimpse of the discontinuity of your present experience, because going from point A to point B is a dream. What was really happening showed up, and you were like, whoa, I must be eating too much butter.
Which is an impossibility, by the way.
Yeah. Some people would say it is. It just can't happen. Stick at a time.
But it is curious to see how that shit just showed up and then how easy it is. Like, you could really go write a fucking book about how, you know, you had some butter, and then one day you were driving your car and you were going to the workshop. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
The transcendent discontinuity of your present experience. Yes, you were going nuts in a good way. Yes.
The myth of space-time.
Think of it this way. If you're riding in an aircraft, looking down at someone in an automobile, it looks like they're driving from fixed point A to fixed point B along corridors we call roads. And oftentimes when we're driving, we feel ourselves moving through an already existent terrain. I'm driving on a road, hills and dales, curves, on an existing terrain. Let's play with it this way. You get into a time machine called your car. You flip the thing and you step on the pedal. The pedal doesn't accelerate the vehicle on a terrain. The pedal accelerates everything coming at you. You haven't moved. So the car is not a vehicle that takes you from a place to a place. The car is, once you sit in it, accelerates everything coming at you. So it's a time-space compressor. It's a time-space accelerator. Because there is no pre-existing terrain. There's just where you are right about now. And everything just pours in at you.
Wow.
way too believable.
It's funny because
I love that.
When I had that dream that I was driving to space, I'm like, why could I still drive? And I'm like, is the wheel too high or what? Because you're just accelerating through.
The steering wheel doesn't turn the wheels. The steering wheel turns the entirety of the universe to face you and come at you really fast.
That Henry Ford?
Yeah, the time machine was built.
Yeah, it almost felt like that. You know these things in the mall where you think there's like this, and
yeah.
You back, and
uh-huh.
Like a,
yeah, that's right.
I mean, it was similar to that.
Yeah, it's a vomitorium.
A what?
Vomitorium.
It's a vomitorium with a movie on the screen.
You try and hit the screen with your vomit.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the clown hits the
bell. Projectile vomiting
competition. Exactly.
When you think about it, nah, don't think about it. You're always where you are. You're never not where you are.
There we go. There we are.
And it seems like you are moving through a body or a vehicle or an aircraft or a boat or with your own two legs. You know, two different terrains.
Not happening.
Not happening.
That's like what's funny about trying to run away from yourself and be a mint, you know?
Yeah.
Comical, because you're like, all right, I'm done. But here I am in Arizona. Here
yeah.
I am in-
right. That's right. It turns out that transcendent discontinuity is what this is. And we think that, you know, something foolishly called enlightenment means I won't suffer anymore. All it suggests is you've become sanguine with transcendent discontinuity. That's all. Through either repeated exposure or some spontaneous, call it event, which shifts the orientation of what you think is yourself, you become confronted with transcendent discontinuity. And instead of snapping back, as Lisa and all of us have done, into what we think is the conventional reality, you find yourself remaining in the observation of whatever you had while driving. So everything that occurs in your so-called life occurs purely apparitionally. That includes your consciousness. Your consciousness and your body are appearing absolutely apparitionally in what you don't know.
I'm trying to change my apparition.
I got it. I hear you. But it's a different metaphor, you see, than ending suffering and then having, you know, the life of Riley, or we call it the life of Byron.
And a good bikini body to show for it.
And a good bikini body to show for it.
Right?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. What if the whole thing was simply about becoming sanguine with transcendent irrationality, transcendent indeterminacy? Sounds good. All right.
Now it has to be.
Yeah. Can I get half mushroom and half pepperoni and... Kundalini rising will raise the temperature a little bit. Kundalini rising will raise the temperature a little bit.
That's the case, Jeff. I got news for you. And I'm hoping they're the age of
it. Should be enlightened. I think they are.
Yeah.
time for the park, I guess.